From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter in Dallas, Texas, and joining me in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado is John Grace. Say hello, John.
Hello, everybody.
And from the Cecil Hotel on Skid Row, Skyping in is Mr. Eric Zaldivar. Say hello, Eric.
Nanu, nanu.
And so today, Eric, I think you picked this movie. The movie we're talking about is Communion, not to be confused with religious communion. No, we are with Catholic communion. We're talking about the 1989 film starring Christopher Walken, directed by Philippe Mora, and written by Whitley Strieber, which is a movie about his close encounter with extraterrestrials. Eric, why did you pick this movie? Given I'm not mistaken,
I actually recommended the 1970 slasher movie Communion. I'm sorry.
Dang it, John!
Darn it! Ah,
John!
I could have seen a way too young Brooke Shields movie.
Damn it!
Where she gets murdered in the first 10 minutes. Damn it!
What is that? The one that's called Alice, Sweet Alice?
Yeah.
I've seen that movie. Yeah.
It's creepy.
It's pretty good, but it's not as good as Communion.
No, it's not. Why'd you pick this one? I actually hadn't heard of this movie, Eric. Why'd you pick it?
Really?
It's fascinating. That's why I picked it. It's a strange little movie. Part TV movie looking, and then all the abduction scenes are just, oh boy, they're strange.
I actually thought I was tricked. When I watched it, I see these, you know, helicopter shots. And I hear Eric Clapton guitar, and I go, damn it, it's another Lethal Weapon movie. I went, oh, no, it's another Lethal Weapon film. No.
Wow, choppers.
Well, this is better than all of those Lethal Weapon movies.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon movies are terrible. Sorry, guys.
I was so surprised by how bad that first one was.
Yeah, it's terrible. I don't know what happened.
Surprise. Well, how about we rewatched it from foggy memories? Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Why did I like this?
Oh, I told my wife, I said, hey, let's watch Lethal Weapon. It's fun. You'll like it. It's kind of like Die Hard, you know? It takes place at Christmas. It's an action movie. It's got Mel Gibson. You like Mel Gibson, right? And we put it on, and she was like, when does this get good? This movie sucks. It's ugly. Why is Danny Glover's house complete squalor? What's going on? What are these Christmas decorations? She just kept going, this movie's... Why is this happening? Why does Mel Gibson have an Australian accent and he's a cop? What's going on?
Yeah, even his Christmas tree in his house looks disheveled.
Why is this cop telling people to shoot people in the leg? Cops don't do that. What's going on?
Yeah.
What's going... All right, I know, it's a bad movie, I'm sorry.
It was written by Shane Black when he was 12.
Yes.
I couldn't believe I had never seen it. I'm like, man, I gotta watch this. This is just kind of the thing I have to watch. And then it was on HBO Max, all four of them. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna watch all of them. And I decided not to watch any of them after that first.
Yeah. This because none of them, like the first movies, you know, everybody agrees is better than the others. Well, what does that tell you? You know.
Yeah. I may dip into the second one, but that's about it.
I remember when I watched them initially, I remember thinking Lethal Weapon 3 was just completely terrible way back, and I've only seen it the one time. Lethal Weapon 4 I might have seen like twice, but...
Just to watch the Jet Li fights?
Yeah, no, I think I watched it again because I was like into Jet Li movies, and so I went, oh, I'm going to watch Lethal Weapon 4 again.
Before I saw the first 15 minutes, I bailed after they catch that shark and it's flopping around in the boat. But the opening was kind of intriguing just because it's like, whoa, you could tell this is deep into a series that was already pretty crazy from the get-go because they're fighting a dude who's like a flamethrower of supervillain. This is so strange.
But Communion... This is based on a book by Whitley Strieber. He wrote the screenplay, although I think he's disavowed the movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think he has.
But
he's wrong.
Yeah, he is wrong. In fact, I think he's insane. He's totally wrong. I looked into other books he's written, and he seems like a crazy person. But this film, Philip Mora is a Australian director. He did The Howling 2.
Mm-hmm. Beast Within.
Howling 3. Pterodactyl
Return
Woman from
to Captain Invincible.
Yeah. Pterodactyl yeah. Woman from Beverly Hills.
This is starting to explain a lot.
But this movie, I mean, I don't know the timeline of weird alien abduction things, but I feel like this was hugely influential on stuff like X-Files.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, it feels like there's a lot of David Lynch-isms in it. Even David Lynch was a thing by this point. But there's a lot of dream logic. This is a movie that feels like you're watching a dream. It's probably the most Lynch-like non-Lynch film I've seen. And Lynch was also a big influence on X-Files. So I feel like I found this missing piece. I found the missing link. I found this, like, ape that...
It's funny, when I was watching it, I didn't realize the movie was made in, like, it came out in 89. I kept thinking it was a mid-90s release. Like, I had not seen it until this week, but I'd always misremembered it as being a film of the 90s. And it wasn't. It came out in, like, I don't think it played in my area. I think that's the problem. And I just totally forgot it came out, because I would have seen it had it played at a local theater, because I read the book in high school. And it was like, I thought it was interesting, and I thought he was full of it. But let's remind our listeners, this was considered nonfiction when it came out.
When I posted on my Instagram and Facebook story that I was watching this movie, and on Twitter, I got a bunch of people saying they read the book. You know, Normally when I post I'm watching a movie, I get crickets. But there was something I watched. Oh, yeah. Dick Tracy. Bunch of people came out of the woodwork to comment on that. And this one, I got a lot of people saying, I never saw the movie, but I read the book. And so, you know, I thought that was interesting.
I don't think it was well distributed. I don't think it was distributed very well at all.
Yeah, the book is obviously big, you know.
Book was huge. Huge.
Huge.
For a couple of years, it was a big nonfiction
bestseller.
It was
a big deal. It was a very big seller. Biggest yeah, alien yes. seller ever.
And Whitley, I remember him being on Larry King and wearing a hat similar to the one that Christopher Walken wears in the movie.
It's still considered nonfiction. I bought it, and it was in the self-help section, believe it or not.
Yes, it is in, like, self-help, new age, yeah. You know, along with the Carlos Castaneda type stuff. It's going to be there.
But
that's where you'll find
it. Whitley Strieber, like, when I looked up this book on Amazon, I saw a bunch of his other books. And he has this book about Jesus. And I went, okay.
He's a Catholic hunter. Did you know that?
Is he? Is he?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Okay. Well, like, I'm going to call him a heretic then, because I looked at it.
Ah, getting in all your Latin terms.
Yeah. Listen, I am ordinariate Catholic.
He is Alienaeus Graeus or something.
So, okay, and I haven't read the book, but I looked at the synopsis of his Jesus book, and it was, what if Jesus had a power that's inside of all of us that we just can't access? And I was going, that sounds like Mormonism to me, because Mormons are the ones who are like, Jesus was God, and so are you.
The Catholics who take ayahuasca down in Costa Rica.
I'm surprised you didn't think that Jesus was an alien.
Oh,
boy. Yeah. Totally missed it.
Oh, totally. You missed the boat.
That's because Larry Cohen had that idea first with God Forgive Me.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did. It sounded very Mormon, his Jesus book. It was that we all have these powers within us or something.
He claims there was something I read up that he had claimed maybe in that book. I don't remember. It's been nearly 40 years since I read the damn thing. I mean, it was at least 35. But he said something like he witnessed Charles Whitman at the Texas Tower. And turns out he was not on campus that day, so he's kind of like a David Hogg of his time.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he misremembered it. He went back and forth on whether or not he was there or not. Like, yeah, I was there. I saw it. I saw he shot a little kid on a bicycle, which never happened.
His head explode.
Right.
It was pretty horrifying. I was reading the book Communion, and there's a whole foreword by Whitley, and he talks about that. And he doesn't walk it back. He just says, I can't explain to you why I made that up, but I just did.
Is it like the alien encounters, maybe?
Yeah. That's the problem, though. You know, I'm only a third of the way through the book, and like it's. I'm not going to say it's convincing. I'm not even an alien guy. Like, I don't, like, do I believe, you know, there's life on other planets? Of course, that seems seems pretty arrogant of me to think otherwise. But I'm not.
I am arrogant. I say we're alone. I'm just gonna be arrogant.
That's fine. I don't care.
Just to be the other voice, you know.
Sure, sure. Why not? Play devil's advocate. That's good.
We're the only ones out here, Eric. Come on.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I, you know, whatever.
Do you side with Obama? Come on. He wants to.
I'll believe in climate change.
Obama wants to create a one world religion. That's why he believes in aliens.
Obama was an alien.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm not like an alien person. I'm not particularly drawn to extraterrestrial things. I don't spend my time reading people's abductions, whether they'd happened or didn't. But for whatever reason, Communion really, really draws me in. And I think it's for the reason that you brought up earlier, that there's a dream logic to the abduction scenes.
Yeah.
Of which there's a lot more than I remember. I don't remember much. There's a lot. The movie, when it's you know, on Earth, if you want to call it that, when it's non-alien related, it looks to me like a TV film. It doesn't look cinematic at all. And then when they switch the abduction stuff, I guess technically it still looks TV-like, but it's on this whole nother level. It's so strange and bizarre. It reminds a movie that reminds me of my own dreams and how I act in my own dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Always gets a big thumbs up from me.
Yeah, that's why I get big Lynch vibes from it, because Lynch is a director who really captures that, the way dreams feel. And this movie, I think, captures it very well.
Occasionally. Lynch loves to screw the pooch on a lot of his movies.
Well, you know, I'm not saying it's perfect, but, you know, when he's on, he's on.
Yeah, I agree, 100%. And this captures it. And, I mean, there's things where he'll... Logically, when reacting to something phantasmical, we don't react the way Chris Walken would react in this movie. At least we don't think so. I don't know how often phantasmical things happen to us. I've had one possible and very unlikely. I'm looking at it from a skeptic's standpoint. It could have been a number of million things, but it's fun to think it was a UFO or an unidentified flying object. We could talk about that later if you want. I have one of those experiences, but normally you don't react the way that Chris Walken does in the movie. You only react that way in a dream when you know it's a dream. Like, he's dancing with the aliens, he's kind of messing around with them, and he's just like...
I want to make a supercut of Chris Walken dancing in movies. Like... This, King of New York, you know, Fat Boy Slim, you know, just all everything.
Right.
I just want it all in one place. Anyway.
Well, what's funny is he's being carried away by, like, the blue gnomes, you know, to destroy your expectations, dear listener. He's not carried away by grays, like Close Encounters. He's carried away by these gnome things with blue faces. But he's like, hey, where are you taking me? He's very casual about, hey, where am I going?
The whole thing is very casual. It's very interesting. It's like juxtaposing, you know, like he should be terrified.
Yeah, he seems like kind of just like, hey, this is kind of weird, right? You know,
yeah,
like, right. They look like gnomes from like an 80s fantasy movie, or like
they're left from a Charles Band troll movie or something.
Yeah, or like a
Troll
Berserk
3.
Yeah.
They look like a Terry Gilliam creation or something. Yeah. They're referred to as the Blue Doctors, the Little Blue Doctors.
Okay.
And there are grays in the movie as
yes.
well.
Yes,
right.
There are.
Right.
There's all sorts of things.
Not convincing grays either.
No, they look like balloons.
And in fact, I like that they're so fake looking. There's there's something about it that makes it even more off-putting and weird that they.
I felt Philippe Mora was almost basically hitting you over the head with a hammer, saying he was dreaming it.
Yeah.
Like he was not kidnapped by aliens.
And frankly, another thing that made it feel dreamy to me was that it doesn't destroy his family the way you'd think it would. You know, if it was real. His family.
The more they come to understand it, the more that they get closer as a family. But before, when he's acting erratically, that's breaking up the marriage.
Yeah, yeah. But it, as it gets more abductee, like when he's getting like anal probed and stuff, the family's more understanding and going, oh, you know, you're having these experiences.
Well, he goes to a therapist who Frances Sternhagen plays a therapist, and she's her specialty is rape victims.
Yes.
And he mentions this in passing, like, sending me to a therapist, especially as rape victims. Yeah. Like, it's just weird or something, you know.
A lot of Walken's dialogue feels improv to me. It feels...
It does.
It feels so... This performance is so Walken.
And I will say, I think this is the first weird Walken movie.
Yeah. I think
you would
right.
get your fill and get all you need from Christopher Walken, who I'm not a big fan of as an actor. I don't really actually care.
Why? You don't like Christopher Walken?
Yeah, I don't like
Why?
Hams. And he's such a ham bone, but this is all you need. You watch this, and it gives you all you need from Walken. It's like this every quirky Walken thing. And I did not, when I realized this movie came out like 89, 88, I'm like, oh, this is the first one. This is the first crazy-ass Walken movie.
Because you know what the next movie he did was? King of New York. Which is
right, and that's not anything like this.
Like, I'm going back, okay, so he did Dead Zone, pretty normal. View to a Kill. You would think Christopher Walken would be a slam dunk as a Bond villain. He sucks as a Bond villain. It's
Mr.
terrible.
Bond, I was raised by Nazis.
Mr. Bond, you amuse me, Mr. Bond.
Yeah.
He has little quirks at work in that movie.
Brainstorm, which is the movie where he killed Natalie Wood.
right. It's very normal. Wear sweaters, and it's...
And you go further back, you have stuff like Heaven's Gate, Deer Hunter. Okay, a movie he is weird in is Annie Hall.
Yeah, and it's intentional.
Well, yeah. He's meant to be weird.
Yes,
yeah.
It's but this movie it is weird walking. Come on, okay.
Yeah. This is the first movie to do all of that.
Well, I'm going to dance with these aliens.
Yeah. Which supposedly that was not in the theatrical cut.
Really?
It was not in the early VHS versions.
That was a mistake.
Yeah, yeah. What are they thinking?
That's because I was like, as we were doing in show prep, well, I was looking at the additions for the Fox Network TV broadcast. And scenes that I saw in this print, because I watched it for the first time on Amazon Prime, Shout Factory put it out on streaming, scope version and all. It has these scenes that, according to the IMDb alternate versions thing, were only part of the Fox Network broadcast. Because I guess Fox aired it after the X-Files hit it big. And that was a network that really exploited all the UFO stuff in the 90s, Alien Autopsy. And they had the... What would you call it? The TV shows that talk to people who said they had their butts probed by aliens and stuff.
Listen, and if you want to have your movie be a hit, have me dancing with aliens.
Right, and supposedly, my guess is this current streaming version is what Philippe Mora always wanted it to be anyway, or he and Chris Walken, and for whatever reason, it wasn't in the theatrical cut. I'm not 100% on it, because it's like, but I just noticed that there's... It's like, well, these extra scenes were in the version I watched, so what the hell happened?
Yeah, you need to have this in the film. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm glad it's there. It's like, when I was watching it, definitely added more to it, because, like, you know, we never see, like, a spaceship. You don't see any of the close encounter shit.
No, there's no spaceship. It's, you know, he gets carried off, and then he's in the alien's lair. And it's very... It doesn't feel like it. There's the one scene that I feel where he gets probed, and it kind of feels like if I think X-Files kind of ripped that scene off for.
Yeah, they did completely.
Yeah, every time they would you know, have Mulder getting like trapped on a ship or something.
Lifted all this. This definitely inspired the X-Files a great deal.
And I think it had a big influence on the Scully pregnant plot, because they touch I was pregnant, then there was an alien visitation, mm-hmm. and then I was not pregnant. You know, there's right. a big plot arc with that in X-Files.
Right.
I think Chris Carter was mining this to death.
Yeah, right. Completely. And the Whitley Strieber books were really big around that time that X-Files was big. Like, his stuff was still selling.
Why did Whitley disavow this movie? Was it because he's like, I'm not Christopher Walken, I don't know who this weirdo is?
Yeah, so, I think partially is like, he made Walken, they had a discussion, is like, hey, can you tone it down? You're making me look like a crazy person. And he's well, if the shoe fits.
Well, yes. Hey, I'm going to work at this word processor in my underpants and cowboy boots.
Yeah. Probably closer to the truth.
Yeah,
it probably is, because like James Ellroy will tell anybody that he works with a tablet and he just writes in shorthand, and he doesn't sit at a typewriter or a word processor like you always see in movies. It's like he sits there with the with the manuscript. It's basically a notebook, like a legal tablet, and he just writes on it, and then he faxes it to his secretary, who could read his handwriting and then type it out. But all these writers, they don't do the sitting with looking out the window with the typewriter and all that stuff you always see in movies. A lot of them will scribble on notebooks or write stuff out on note cards, index cards, speak into a tape recorder.
The legal pad is a big thing. Like, they love to, there's a lot of writers who love to just scribble it all out on a legal pad.
I think Tarantino does that. I think Tarantino says he writes standing up with a legal pad and just writes.
Sometimes shit happens at inopportune moments where you're not near a computer or something, and so you have to have that notepad on you.
And they get into that habit of writing that way. It's just like, it's easier for them.
Yeah, because I can't, because I've had ideas where I'm like, oh man, I've got this idea for something, but I don't have anything to write with, and then it's gone,
Right, right.
Yeah, it's ethereal. It will go away. If you don't put pen to paper right away, it seems like. The older you get, it happens too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So that was actually, I think, was very close to the truth. And that, like I've said, that hat he wears throughout the film when he's writing and stuff, I've seen Whitley Strieber wear that hat when he's interviewed.
Yeah, I think he's disavowed it just because of the Walken. This is all speculation. He just wasn't pleased with the Walken performance. I've been reading his book. It can't be the content, because I've been reading the book and it seems to pretty much match what's on screen. So, although that forward was really weird, where he claims to have seen the tower shooting, but then it's just like, I made it up. I don't know why. But you want to hear about kind of an addendum to all of this stuff, because the forward was made in 2008, long after he wrote it. He described a thing where he would go to the back of the woods in his house, because that's where he'd routinely meet the aliens or the visitors. And they were there for a time, and then they slowly dissipated, little by little, over the course of years. And then finally, they just sort of installed this one lone humanoid, tall humanoid figure, who would, whenever Whitley would get near him, he would look kind of like, don't do that. He'd have this look on his face, like, don't get near me. So Whitley wouldn't. But then this same kind of tall, gaunt figure would rush over to his window and pound on the window whenever there was a visitor coming to the cabin. So, it's just like, that sounded like either a bunch of hokum or a crazy person. I don't know what really to believe.
Sounds like nutso, like bipolar something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is very convincing with his abduction stuff. And because he goes through all the reason it's convincing is because he goes through all the skeptic possibilities that it could have been, whether light hitting fog and repressed memories or whatever, but the transcripts, he has transcripts from his psychiatrist from when he was hypnotized, and it reads like a dream. It reads like a very vivid dream. So I don't know. Have you guys ever had sleep paralysis?
I might have when I was a child.
I feel like I've had it once or twice, but I didn't have the big reaction to it.
it was more abundant for me as a kid, but fairly recently, like maybe 5 years ago, I had it for the last time. I don't know for the rest of my life or not, but for the last time, it's very rare. Because when you're an adult, you dream about, if you have a nightmare, it's like a very adult nightmare. It's just like, oh, fuck, I didn't pay my rent. I didn't pay, you know, like that sort of stuff. There's
I'm
no
late. I can't get there.
I'm late. I can't get there. Oh, I need someone to understand this, but they're not. And everything keeps changing on me. It's almost like a form of dyslexia when you're trying to read something that you really got to, that sort of stuff. But the last time I had a night terror or sleep paralysis or whatever it's called, which is like, you know, your body paralyzes, your brain paralyzes you so you don't act out on your dreams. And then you wake up in a sort of anomaly and you're still kind of hallucinating. That happened to me. And the last time it was, I felt like there was this giant, like, serpent anaconda type thing slithering beneath the mattress and the bed frame underneath me, and I felt it. And that's why this movie kind of speaks to me, because there's a scene just like it where you know what it is. I know exactly what's going on at this point when I'm 28 years old. I know what's happening to me, and I just let this play out. And then finally, when it wouldn't go away, I was able to mouth, okay, that's enough. And then I woke up and it just sort of, you know, dissipated. And like Walken has a lot of scenes like that where he's just like looking at the alien. He's just like, that's not you. And he's like kind of joking around, thinking it. He pulls off the mask of the alien. There's this reptilian humanoid type face. Do you remember seeing that? Seems like it pulls from a lot of folklore, or not folklore, but it pulls from a lot of different theories and things like that. It looked reptilian to me. It looked like a lizard thing.
Right.
I haven't gotten to that point in the book, so I don't know if Schreiber or Whitley describes any of that. But I found that intriguing when I watched it back in, I guess, the early point of the last decade. But anyways, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm very angry, so I'm glad you apologized.
Yeah, match that, Hunter. You tell us a story, but you had a giant snake under your bed.
Exactly.
Well, that was it. That was all a dream, but yeah.
Yes. Well, the odd thing is how much Whitley's routine, his gimmick, resembles the Shaver Mysteries, which are this phenomena. Either of you guys ever heard of Richard Sharp Shaver?
No.
I've heard of Billy Joe Shaver.
Well, Richard Shaver was, he was getting these science fiction stories published, I believe in the 1950s. The editor was Ray Palmer, and this was part of the flying saucer lore that really blew up in the 50s. And he was claiming there were these like lizard people living under the ground that were controlling everything, and they were, you know, they were kidnapping him and bringing him underneath. And I've never read them, I've just read summaries of them and stuff, and I know that the Shaver Mysteries really had the sci-fi community really like a riff. Like there was a lot of controversy about him back in the 1950s, because back then, believe it or not, science fiction fans were not new age types or, you know, the type to believe in global warming or whatever. They were actually like real science people. You know, they believed in the real deal. They were skeptical. And the Shaver Mysteries kind of split the readership. The problem is every time they were publishing amazing stories, they sold like crazy. They had a following. And you know, you see a lot of the whole lizard people controlling things from under the Denver airport. It has its roots in the Shaver Mysteries. And he was claiming that he was having these encounters with them. They were telling him about the history of the world and, you know, how they controlled things. I mean, you can look it up. There's Wikipedia entries, there's websites that detail them and everything, but it's very similar to what Whitley was doing in the late 80s and, you know, kind of creating this phenomenon. And I mean, the Communion and the follow-up books of Communion, where he keeps talking about how they communicated with him. I've never read them. Those sold better than his fiction novels, which were pretty good. Like, I read Wolf and I thought it was great.
Yeah. I saw that he'd written a bunch of those.
Are you saying, John, the paramilitary groups are not having laser battles with aliens underneath Denver Airport? Is that what you're saying?
Possibly not. I don't mean to shatter people's dreams.
Oh, jeez.
Possibly not.
That's the thing Whitley. That's the thing about. So this, as you pointed out, made money. The book.
Yeah.
But the way he tells it in the foreword, and what makes me kind of, you know, lean on his side a little bit, is because why would this successful novelist, unless he hadn't sold anything since The Hunger or whatever,
right,
why would this successful novelist throw caution to the wind and kind of ruin his reputation with these crazy stories?
Yeah, I know. And then, like War Day, which was a book he co-wrote with somebody, I think, after The Hunger or Wolf and one of the others, that sold really well. It was never made into a movie. It was a nuclear war survival tale. And I was a little surprised that he took that approach of writing about these things. And in personally, I think he was having these waking dreams or these, you know, paralysis or whatever while he's dreaming. And I guess writing about it, maybe he's having writer's block. Did you feel in the movie that it was implying he had writer's block? Because it sounded like he was writing a sequel to Hunger or the Wolfen or something.
He gets really excited when he's like, "I'm gonna write about this. This is what I'm gonna write about. This is my next book."
Like, it was missing a scene that he hadn't been able to write anything, and he had writer's block. That was my guess.
It's, I mean, yeah, I could imply that. I just took it as, and I've already gotten to the point in the book where that seems to be the case. It seems to be that he's just like kind of like a rape victim who didn't know what happened to them. Say they were knocked out or something, like that. You can't get this out of your mind, and it's affecting you in your daily life. It's affecting your marriage. It's affecting your friendships. Right. I kind of saw it as that in the film, where he just couldn't get this. His brain was in a state of unrest.
Right.
One of his buddies is played by Andreas Katsoulis.
Who's an actual, yeah, but he in the book, that's not mentioned in the movie, but in the book, it's actually a writer friend of his who was this, he was captured by the commies in USSR and escaped and wrote about it here. I wish I had my notepad with me, but it seems to have disappeared on me because I wrote all this down. That is another author. Him and his wife are authors, actually. I think he's Hungarian or something.
Yeah, because they make a lot of jokes about like him being Romanian or Hungarian. And but yeah, Katsoulis, people may know him from Babylon 5. He played Jakar on Babylon 5. I watched an episode of Star Trek Enterprise he was in the other day. But, you know, interesting actor. Died very young. Smoking killed him. So there you go.
Yikes, don't smoke, kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't smoke. But the thing is, Whitley was a really good fiction novelist, because I like The Wolfen is a really good book, and nothing like the movie. Like, it's a bit different. And he was a good novelist during that, you know, in the 80s there was this boom of horror novelists and horror novels. They were just everywhere. Because Stephen King did so well, and Peter Straub was doing real well, so
and
there were
Richard
all these writers following up.
Just kidding.
Yes, Whitley was one of the better writers. I think he was a better writer than Kino. So I was really surprised he took this approach with Communion, and of course the one thing that kind of bugged me about the movie, and I could see why they legally couldn't do it, I can't remember if it was acknowledged in the book, is how similar, like, how do we... At no time does Whitley say, hey, this is like those Aliens and Close Encounters, which was a super popular film in 78 or 77. You know, it's like he never compares it to that. Like, it's never compared to the giant spaceship or any of that sort of thing. But the fact that the Greys look like what's at the end of Close Encounters, it's like it's never acknowledged.
Perhaps I have a brain tumor like François Truffaut at the end of Close Encounters.
Yeah, he's got a plagiarism block. It's, you know, it blocks the plagiarism of the work. It's like, that's why I made up these blue bastards instead of the Greys.
Those blue bastards.
Because all the other UFO kidnapping stories I've read, you know, when I read the summaries of this stuff and all those different exploitive books, it was always Greys taking them, you know, like they could never figure us out. Huh, food goes in and food goes out. You know, we're not that hard. We're not that complex. But yeah, it doesn't... To not acknowledge stuff that was already well-known in pop culture was a little odd.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. He's got a like he lives in a bubble and does like he never saw Close Encounters. I just wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done it where if they couldn't mention Close Encounters, I mean, there was plenty of movies that they could have, you know, or not
outer,
even
the Outer Limits. Right, you know, there's Outer Limits episodes.
Could have made a reference. It's like,
yeah, but if you mention Outer Limits, you get sued by Harlan Ellison. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's right.
You'll end up like Jim Cameron. You know,
well, there's this notorious story, Betty and Barney Hill. You can look it up. It was one of the ones that convinced a lot of people because I think it was a black couple. And they were portrayed in a TV movie by James Earl Jones and another popular actor or actress. And I think it was called like the UFO incident, something like that. I've never seen it. But everybody said that was a really convincing story. And then I read in one Skeptic magazine that where they claimed it happened like 3 days after a certain episode of The Outer Limits aired, you know, with very similar looking aliens to what they described. So it's sort of that sort of thing.
No,
there was an incident with Mississippi fishermen, like in the early 70s or something. And I'd have to look it up and find it. I think they were near Biloxi and they were on the news talking about it, how they'd encountered aliens. Apparently freaked my grandfather out, who's never believed that sort of shit at all. And apparently he was pretty convinced by those guys. But I think I looked up the incident. It was another case where a TV movie aired with a UFO encounter like that. And they were just repeating what they saw in the movie. And they may have had a waking dream or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Sleep paralysis.
You were complaining about the grays looking kind of like balloons in this one. Have you taken a look at the grays, what they look like in the UFO incident?
No. It's just guys wearing Don Post mask, I imagine.
Pretty much, yeah. They are Halloween costumes.
Yeah, they didn't put much money. They didn't have Rick Baker like doing that sort of stuff.
I'd like to see this.
Yeah, I'd like to see it myself. I have not, haven't seen it. I've just seen photos from it and that sort of thing.
Yeah, walking. Really, they should have thrown a line in there. Was just like, what am I seeing? Little green men?
Yeah, exactly. It's like.
Listen, well, I'm not talking about.
Supposed to be making a mountain, the devil's mountain, out of mashed potatoes.
Yeah, there you go.
Who am I, Richard Dreyfuss?
Yes.
What am I? What am I going to leave my kids to go out into space? Come on.
Yeah. Oh boy, is that character an asshole in that movie?
Yeah, Spielberg has admitted as much. He said, "He goes, that is a movie written by a man without children."
Paul Schrader.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Spielberg said after he had kids, he went, "What was I thinking with that ending with Dreyfuss?" He goes,
"Well, a lot was taken out of Steven when those kids came along.
Yeah. You
know, a lot was taken. we're not going to get another Temple of Doom out of him. I'll tell you that much."
Nah.
Yeah. There's the ideology. All kinds of stuff has messed up Steven. So. You know, but Eric and I were talking about how Steven is no longer the king of the boomers. Martin Scorsese is.
Yeah, that's undisputed right now.
Yeah.
War of the Worlds was the last movie I distinctly remember being the Steven Spielberg film that everybody had to go see because everything prior to that,
yeah.
Like, oh man, what an event. We got to go see the Steven Spielberg movie. After that, nobody cared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody He's cared. Over.
Yeah.
Bridge of Spies.
Nobody
Big
cares.
Event. Big event. Bridge of Spies. Just kidding.
Everybody forgot that came out. That's because of Tito, Tom Hanks.
Lincoln, War Horse, even his last.
His 10-10 movie was good, but it wasn't an event.
I need to see it, and it wasn't an event.
It's
I mean,
good.
That character,
it's good.
That character nobody cares about in America. So
it was an event in Europe.
It's
in the EU.
It's a very good. It's a good movie. You liked it, John, didn't you?
Yeah.
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 I liked it. I enjoyed it. I love the 10-10. You know, the story collections or graphic novels. I don't know what the hell we call them. Not really comic books.
They're
sure.
It's just they're French funny books. Let's call them that.
Unfortunately, the UFO incident does not. They're Belgian. The UFO.
Oh
incident,
yeah, sorry. Same thing.
Yeah. There's no bootleg upload of the UFO incident on YouTube, disappointingly. So I'd like to see it though. Oh well.
Yeah.
Alert us if it shows up on streaming.
Did any of you ever see Fire in the Sky? That's one I've always wanted to see.
Now that I just saw that the UFO incident aired something like 2 weeks before Travis Walton reported what he saw in Fire in the Sky.
Interesting.
Yeah. So every time this stuff is on TV, it inspires the next convincing.
I was like, abducted by aliens after seeing Fire in the Sky.
Because they're probably having these waking dreams or nightmares about the movie inspires some nightmare to them, and they think it's real, and they have the sleep paralysis, and, you know, report it as true. Has to be it.
I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, it is pretty coincidental. Yeah. You want to hear about my possible UFO sighting, maybe?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I want to hear about it, and then I want to tell you why it didn't happen. I'm just kidding.
You got it. Yeah, that's all right. So I would go visit a girlfriend in a place called Weston, Florida, which is about 15 miles south of where I was living for a long time. And between there and a suburb of Miami, Miami Lakes, it's pretty desolate. It's you're on a highway called, I think it's I-75.
So it's like the movie Stick. Like
it's exactly like the movie Stick. There's Everglades. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's just
you were doing push-ups on a pier and everything before you
exactly. I was on a very smooth Florida highway, unlike these highways in California. And this is around 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and the highway is for this hour is packed for some reason. It usually is not filled with cars and traffic. It's not bumper to bumper. It's we're steady flow, but there's a lot of people on the road. And all of a sudden, I look up at the something catches my eye, and I look up at it, and in the sky there is a little tiny, like puke green, iris. It kind of like an iris that it opens up. It goes, zzz, and if you were to put like you could kind of cover your thumb with it. It's about that size from what I saw, from where I was my viewpoint. And it just sort of appeared, it grew a little bigger until it reached the point where it was not going to grow anymore. And it just stayed there, hovering. It looked to be from space. It looked to be from very far away into the atmosphere. Did not seem to be any closer than that. And then I just kept looking at it, and I kind of looked around to see if other people were seeing it too. And all of a sudden, it popped, and the whole sky went green. For a split second, it just almost like thunder, as if thunder was green, or lightning. Rather.
That's the name of your book. Thunder was green.
Thunder was green. Lightning. You know how when lightning strikes, you know it lights up the entire. It was like that, without the thunderbolt. And that was it. It was done. And I turned to the guy next to me. We're kind of neck and neck on the highway. And he's noticing it too, and we looked at each other like, what? We did, you know, the hands up in the air, shrugging and stuff. And I never told anybody about it. I completely forgot about it. I went on with my merry way until years later. I saw Kurt Russell on one of these vacuous, awful late night shows with these hosts, and he was talking about the Phoenix Lights, and that he's the pilot that called in the Phoenix Lights. And then when he landed and went back home to his wife, he never said anything about it until it was a big deal on TV a few years later. He says, oh, that was me. I called that in. I will tell you, that night I did watch Invasion of the Saucer Men, so that probably had everything to do with it.
Yes.
Well, I should do my Penn Jillette voice. Go, hey, UFOs are bullshit. It's like, what you saw was just a weather balloon mixed with the same time as the Borealis lights in the sky, and it's all bullshit.
Sure, yeah. No, I'm not saying it was a UFO. It could have been swamp gas for all I know.
As an atheist, I will say it's...
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna do my Teller voice and say...
We're waiting.
That's the joke.
Well, he did speak at the end of Penn and Teller Get Killed.
That's right, he did. I saw
that
movie.
Not a movie I recommend.
No, it's a terrible film.
It's awful.
I got those two conflated. I thought you were talking about Penn. No.
I wonder if Penn Jillette needs to be abducted by aliens. I think that would change everything.
Well, he went into a bunch of pseudoscience jargon, junk science crap in his diet book.
Is that the diet book where he claims that he didn't do any exercise to lose weight, but then like 30 pages later admits that he's on a cycle every day?
Yeah, he's like cycling for like 3 hours a day. It's like, well, you know what exercise is, dumbass.
What a fucking idiot.
Can't can't. After I read that book, I said I'm never listening to him again.
He's a total idiot.
Oh, he's been insufferable the past few years. Oh my goodness. Going on, Bill Maher, like, oh, I think I could, consider socialism. Like, what? Flies in the face of everything that you've said for years. This is bizarre.
This is a guy that they had G. Gordon Liddy on one of their specials.
Yeah. I mean, I guess people can evolve or devolve in this case.
But, totally devolve. Socialism is an atheist. I think I can go for it.
Like, what? Oh, dear. What'd you think about the movie? It's kind of a nice little people talk about holiday films and traditionally watch, you know, everybody watches Christmas Vacation.
Communion is a Christmas movie and a Halloween movie.
And a Halloween, yeah. It's got two great scenes in both holidays. That Halloween scene is really effective.
It's really good. It's really scary. Yeah.
Especially when he yells at the kid in the costume, the girl in the costume. What are you doing? What the hell? Scaring a kid like this.
Yeah.
No, it's Christmas. Like Nightmare Before Christmas. You can do either one.
Yeah.
In fact, I think this should replace Nightmare Before Christmas in the culture. Thank you.
Totally.
Tired of seeing these Hot Topic kids.
Yeah, I'm tired of that shit. We need a communion comeback as a culture. I mean, this is where Jay Moore got his friggin' Christopher Walken impression.
Wow.
It is totally from this.
Do you think so?
Completely.
You think he got it from Communion? That's very interesting.
I think Jay Moore had a VHS of Communion that he was watching on replay.
Wow, we'll have to ask Jake what he thinks. Jay, excuse me, not Jake. I'm thinking of Jake Paul, who was just
who's fighting. Did he? Who won the Mayweather fight?
I'm pretty sure Mayweather killed him. Well, not killed him, but like just sort of did the Floyd Mayweather thing where he lets it play out for a long time.
Let's see.
Boxing is dead.
Yeah, we know that. We'll have to have LaFon back on to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll get.
But he'll say it died decades ago.
we'll have
he beat Jake Paul. What?
Wait, what?
Jake Paul beat him.
Really?
Yes.
Logan Paul live results analysis. Yeah.
You gotta be kidding me.
I'm not kidding.
That he no. Yeah, I mean, it happened, but did it really?
Yeah.
I think Meriwether took a fall on that one.
He's 50-1. Holy fuck, my brother just beat Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
Floyd Mayweather.
Everybody's claiming it was rigged.
Floyd Mayweather could make 100 mil for Logan Paul fight.
Yeah.
All right, what's this? Yeah.
Jeez. Lame ass fight.
We should have Christopher Walken in a boxing. That would be something, wouldn't you say?
It's also 30 years too late.
Well, listen, he could just play his character from Seven Psychopaths. You know, but he's got the that guy pulls that gun on him. He's like, but I have a gun. He's like, do what I say. No.
After the show is over, I know what I'm going to be trying to watch on YouTube as pirate uploads happen by the every 2 minutes or so.
Oh yeah, yeah.
How is the movie not a thing with like millennials who are obsessed with Chris Walken for like a few years?
I don't know. That's why I'm kind of amazed that I'd never heard of it.
Availability has been spotty.
Yeah.
It got a VHS, it got a Laserdisc. I don't know when it got a DVD release. I remember I was looking for it one night on DVD at like a used store, Second and Charles, because Eric had mentioned it as a possibility. And I said, well, let me look for it. And I couldn't find it anywhere. And I looked, and like at the time, I think the DVDs were going for stupid money, which means they had a low print run and weren't a lot of them out there. And I was just like, I guess I'll have to order a foreign Blu-ray. But then the damn thing pops up on Amazon Prime, because I guess Shout's going to do a special edition or may have already done one, and they're handling it right now. But I think it's a spotty distribution. And also it got lumped in with the UFO stuff of the 90s, like the X-Files and Fire in the Sky, movies like that, and probably was forgotten that it was a walk-in ham-bone extravaganza.
You know, I was, and you're probably right about this. The releases have made it more obscure, but I wasn't aware of it until I was working with my loony cousin who was into all that kind of stuff. We worked at a country club together in 08, and he told me about it. It wouldn't be until several years later till I would actually watch it. I mean, that cousin ended up being a sex offender, but that's besides the point.
Jeez.
So good on him for recommending this to me.
Yeah.
He's a regular Fox Mulder, that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Philippe Mora also is just the type of director, his stuff. It goes straight to video and usually disappears, or it's well remembered as something MGM sunk money into, like The Beast Within or something like that.
It feels cheap too. I mean, don't you get that?
It is a cheap movie. It's a very cheap film.
Yeah,
it really did feel like, I don't know, ABC Movie of the Week or something.
Well, I was watching
Movie of the Week in scope.
In scope, right. Yeah. Yes.
I was watching it wondering like how this came together. And not because it's bad, but because it's so weird.
Yeah.
Just wondering, you know, how they get walk-in, how this director, this writer, it feels like such a strange project to come together. With the cheapness, you know.
I don't think a major studio wanted to touch it, to be honest with you. I think this is something that had to be done independently. I think there was some Australian money involved. Because I noticed the credits credited these studios in Australia for post-production work. And Philippe Mora is an Australian director anyway. And was once known as an Ozploitation guy.
Yeah, he was.
And I think that was the only way this got made, was it was sort of like an independent production. And, of course, they're not going to have the money to get ILM to do their monsters.
Well, that's where the studio would have gone wrong with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Because the balloon grays and all the kind of cheapness of makes it gives it that, like, you know, I mean, we don't know if these things exist. We don't know what they look like. It could very well look like a friggin' balloon. I don't know.
Right, and Walken was not a major star at the time. Remember, he was starring in like a James Glickenhaus movie along with this.
Yeah, Dogs of War, right? Yeah.
No, Dogs of War was a big production in the early 80s. He was in a Glickenhaus movie called McBain.
McBain, yeah.
And it's awful. It's terrible. Like, I saw it once on video and that was it. But he was like sort of like a has-been. He wasn't respected as this character actor like he is now, or, you know, he's going to do something crazy.
Well, that's because he killed Natalie Wood.
Right. Well, it's a Natalie Wood thing, and also
It was Aliens that took a...
I think there was a feeling that he peaked with Deer Hunter.
Deer Hunter.
And when he did Dogs of War, that was a moderately popular movie, but it was like a gritty kind of men's movie or whatever that was sort of forgotten by 84, 85.
Was the beginning of Walken as a meme, which hasn't been as strong as Nick Cage as a meme,
right,
but was the beginning of him as a meme Weapon of Choice? I think so.
I almost feel like it was, shit. What was it? Comfort of Strangers? It might have been that. It might have been King of New York. Something. He started getting more of a rep as like a quirky actor, like after King of New York. I mean,
internet age, young people, like, oh, look at this crazy guy.
Chip, save yourself.
Chip. What about Batman?
What about Pulp Fiction?
Yeah,
I hit this uncomfortable hunk of metal up my ass.
Well, he's better in True Romance with Dennis Hopper.
Oh yeah, he did all the
your
able
son fuckhead.
Yeah. And that is a great scene. Yeah,
he's fantastic. That's his best work right there. You know.
That's the best work for a lot of people involved.
Yes,
Quentin, without a doubt, that's the best thing he's written.
He's got a lot of stuff with Abel Ferrara, like King of New York, The Funeral, New Rose Hotel, what was that vampire one? The Addiction.
Right.
I loved him as the Headless Horseman in Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah,
it seems like a conk your head and obvious kind of casting choice. As the what is he in the book, also in the movie, the Hessian.
The Hessian, yes.
There is something. Is he German? He looks like obviously strangely European.
Yeah. Oh, Walken.
Walken, yes.
I don't know. But like just, him as a
let's
him,
just say if the Eurocrime movies were big in the 90s, Walken would have been starring in a bunch of Italian movies.
He was
at that level. He wasn't a star, but he was a respected actor, and you could pay him to be in anything if, as long as he could bring his own personality to it.
You know what's one I loved with him was when he was Morty in Click, the man who works in the Beyond section of Bed Bath & Beyond.
Never seen Click.
It's basically he's Clarence in It's a Wonderful Life, but it's just I love him. He's at the Beyond. He goes to Bed Bath and Beyond, and he's in the Beyond section.
Well, he is very much. He became a self parody by the 21st century and the internet age. So,
like he was in a lot of comedies. Like he was in Joe Dirt, Blast from the Past,
making fun of his own image, pretty much.
What is that from? The Bed Bath Beyond thing you said?
Click with what? Adam Sandler.
What year? Oh, Click. Okay, so who stole who from first? Because that's a Family Guy joke.
Click was 2006.
I'd have to find out what episode that is, but it's like where the character goes to Bed Bath & Beyond, and they're like, okay, yeah, you could find that on aisle, whatever. Just stay away from the Beyond section. And it's like the Twilight Zone opening.
Yeah, that's what happens in Click. Like, it's this weird, like, other dimension.
Very interesting. Now I want to find out who stole from who.
Yeah. Sounds like somebody took something.
Yeah, by the way, Walken, his father was German. His mother's Scottish.
Okay, there you go.
He looks like it.
Have any of you ever seen the Prophecy movies with him?
Never.
Saw the first one ages ago. Don't remember anything about it.
Those have
it was
like
getting by
thing.
On weird Walken persona.
Yeah.
Season 4 of Family Guy is where it's from. So what year is that? 2005, 2006. Holy shit.
It's around the same time.
Yeah, that's strange. Mm. Might be a Volcano Dante's Peak scenario.
Maybe.
Parallel thinking.
Yeah, maybe some comedy writers cross-pollinated on those two things.
Yeah. Or maybe some corporate espionage. Who knows? I don't know.
It was a coffee shop conversation that ended up in both scripts, like the Tarantino-Roger Avery feud.
Yeah. We were hanging out at the same Starbucks.
Yeah.
That's right. Walken is in Catch Me If You Can.
That's right. Yeah.
That reminds me of an entire period of Steven Spielberg movies that, like, how the hell was this a hit? And it was because it was Steven Spielberg. Remember the Terminal? Remember the fucking Terminal?
Which is one of his worst movies. I hate that movie.
It's like, how was this a hit? And terrible. It's because it was Steven Spielberg.
It's like Tom Hanks, he's this whimsical foreigner who's trapped at an airport. So stupid. Hate it.
Boomers still went to movies. That's why it was a hit.
Yeah.
I agree. The Terminal had a lot to do with the fact that people just eventually went away from Spielberg. Like, okay, we don't have to see everything this guy does. Because that was 2003 or 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
And War of the Worlds was the next film, the summer of 2005. And as I said, that was the last one that was the most.
A lot of people were disappointed by War of the Worlds, and I think Tom Cruise kind of heard it as well.
Well, that was the year where Cruise went from hunky guy to crazy person that women wouldn't want to be with anymore, because that was the Oprah jumping on the couch thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. It was either that or Mission Impossible 3. Those two kind of run together in my head.
He was very enthusiastic. He had a new beard.
I don't even
very
know.
Excited about this beard.
I don't even know if that's the case. He just seems like a guy who's at 110% all day. I don't even know if he's gay or not.
I need to go back and watch Balls of Fury.
For a while. No, actually, you don't. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Walken took his internet fame and just soured everybody on, like, he just picked the wrong stuff.
That was a movie that I think where people had enough.
Yeah. Whereas, as say what you want about Mandy, I don't like it, but like Nick Cage is doing the right thing with his, you know, ironic fame.
Yeah, I didn't like Mandy, but I understand. Understand it. And oh, I forgot that Walken was King Louie in the Jungle Book remake.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, I want to be like you.
Sounds like a line to tell the aliens in this movie.
Yeah.
All
Oh man. Yeah, I think another thing that contributed to Walken's internet fame was the SNL Blue Oyster Cult skit.
Yes,
yeah, totally.
I put my pants on one leg at a time, but when I do it, I make hit records. I make gold records.
It's so bad that I noticed at a Mississippi State football game, of course, the big tradition for those fans is to, they would bring cowbells to the stadium and ring them when State would score a touchdown. They were doing this at least since the 70s, probably before then. But I remember as a kid, it's a very annoying thing to have happen at a football game. And I noticed lately, like on the giant scoreboard, you have the animation when they score a touchdown, you see Christopher Walken's face. And it says more cowbell, and fans start with cowbell. That's how bad it's gotten.
Were you guys aware that Chris Walken played Elvis in a stage play?
No.
I had heard about that.
Don't step on my blue suede shoes.
Yeah, peanut butter and banana sandwich.
Listen, you got any more of them Vicodins?
I'm shooting this TV. Bring me another.
Listen, LBJ was on the television, so I had to shoot it. What can I say?
I'm gonna have Mike Stone killed for taking Priscilla.
I'm sorry. Anyway, what were you saying?
Is Communion the definitive Walken movie?
Yes.
Yeah. Before I would have said King of New York, but this beats it for sure.
I don't even like King of New York.
I don't like it either. Bullshit.
It's just the dancing. It's the Walken. It's the weird combo of Walken and gangsters to me that just makes it so odd. As far as Abel Ferrara movies go, it's not the best, but this movie is pure weird Walken. In fact, when I was watching it, I went, I can't believe I haven't heard of this before now.
We have to make it a thing.
Yeah.
Watch on Christmas and Halloween, 2 months apart.
This is the first step.
Yes.
Well, I think what helps with this is the acting is actually pretty good all around, like from the entire cast.
Yeah.
It's like this is not like a bad performance here. Like even the child actor, and that's where a lot of these movies tend to go bad, is like the kid will be too cute or whatever. The kid in this is pretty good. Like he's just right. You know, he doesn't overdo it. You know, he's it's not hammy or anything. It's not saccharine, but it works. And the arguments Walken has with Lindsay Krause, they're kind of convincing because she's not turning on him. You know, she's like, I'm here to help you. What's going on here? Like, I don't know. There's more of a reality to it. They were more convincing as a family than what I usually see in these types of movies.
Yeah, the only discussion that felt like, okay, this is like a Brian De Palma-esque, you know, wannabe thing where I'm watching a movie about a movie, or movie, not a, you know, something trying right. to be realistic, was towards the end where they're at that art gallery and they're having a discussion.
Yeah. I will admit, I will cop to this. I actually started to doze off in a nap during that scene. And I woke up, I had to rewind it, which on Amazon Prime is a pain in the ass. I was like, okay, I just missed this.
Yeah, but overall, I think it's a very intriguing movie. It's one of those things that really sticks with you after you watch it. I've only seen it twice. Between 8 years, I think. And it's one of those things I don't want to watch too often either. I feel like the mystery will kind of reveal itself. So don't watch it in October and December every year. Don't do that.
Watch it like every couple of years, watch maybe on Halloween, and then a couple of years later, maybe on Christmas. It might be the way to do it.
Yeah.
But it should be a thing. I don't know why it's not more popular. It is pretty much the Christopher Walken Hambone movie.
Maybe it happens with this Shout Factory release. I don't know.
If they're putting it out. Have they even announced it? I can't even tell. It's just I know they're putting it on streaming. In fact, they're going to pull it from Amazon Prime and put it on Shout Factory TV probably within a couple of months because they always do that shit.
Yeah, go watch it now while you can on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, don't miss a chance to watch it for free.
It's also on Tubi for free.
Okay, there you go.
If you want to put up with advertisements, sure.
Yeah, I don't. I wouldn't recommend watching it there if it's on Prime because, I looked up where it was streaming and Tubi came up. It didn't tell me, the website gave me bad info. It just said that Tubi was streaming it. And I went there And the first thing I see is, get your HPV vaccine for your kids today.
What?
Yeah, that was like, the moment I pull it up, it's like, defend your daughters from cancer. Get them HPV vaccines today. Not today, cancer.
Oh my God. I'd rather be probed.
What's going on? Oh, man. And they go, and the commercial goes, and there's no way to predict how HPV will strike. There is a pretty good way to predict how HPV will strike. You get it from sex. That's it.
You're right.
You know, that's
there
it.
There were similar there were similar AIDS ads with pseudoscience, nonsense like that as well. But oh, by the way, Whitley Strieber has a podcast, Dreamland, because he used to sub for Art Bell every now and then. And he's kind of spun it off to his own show. I have not listened to it yet. He only finished his movie this morning. So I was like, okay, I may have to start listening to Whitley's show to see if he's still kind of kooky or if it's just an entertaining, you know.
I want it to be all out kook because that would be entertaining. But I'm trying to keep my expectations.
I want it to be like Coast to Coast AM on acid.
Yeah.
Well, what I would.
You know, it's going to be really exciting when you fire it up. Hello, this is Whitley Strieber. I had a dream the other night that there were these little orc men probing my anus. It was wild.
I stuck this watch in my ass.
You know, I had this...
I had this uncomfortable metal up my ass.
Metal up my ass.
It's uncomfortable hunk
of. And now I'm giving it to you.
as a giveaway prize on the podcast. So go over to the Patreon. Be one of my tippy top cream of the crop.
Yes. Ali Chi Chi Tran is our number one donor this week. You fucking fans, don't be cheap. Go to the Patreon.
Listen, I do this Patreon. For free for you. This is like coming to the wedding and not going to the reception. You hear what I'm saying?
Yes, I mean, Kim Kardashian, I have the word. She's had the fat in her ass. It's taken from her stomach. It's injected into her ass. That's what I've heard. That's what I'm hearing. Harvey Weinstein's going to be freed. He's going to get out of these charges.
One of my contacts in the FBI, he told me. he told me that the little green men are 100% real, and that my friend Barack Obama, he told me that there's going to be new world religions once the existence is made known. And it's going to be a world religion that also happens to suit the interest, the opinions of the rich. So go figure.
It would be pretty hilarious if Chris Walken was moonlighting as Whitley.
Moonlights as Whitley and AJ Benza.
Yeah, AJ Benza.
Famous bitch. I think that'd be great. He just like moonlights his different podcasters. That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
he just turns it into the Christopher Walken show.
Yeah, he could do what he could do the Bill Murray thing, but online.
Yeah,
showed up. Stupid marriage. Stop doing that, please. I think it's done. Thankfully.
Yeah. It's over. Boomer's got to retire sooner or later. So
retire in your North Carolina. What is it? What's that hipster town?
Asheville, North Carolina.
Asheville, yeah.
Well, the something I had discussed with Eric a couple weeks ago in one of our off-mic conversations was that both Nicolas Cage and Christopher Walken never make political statements, ever.
Mm-mm.
I've never noticed them. And they may have in the past. I've never seen them. I don't see them, stumping for candidates or anything. They never get political.
Listen, I made a political statement. I'm going to disagree with you. My political statement was Wayne's World 2. Thank you very much. And my political...
He votes for LaRouche. He votes for Lyndon LaRouche. I think he and Cage both vote for LaRouche.
Yeah.
Emeritus Lyndon LaRouche.
He votes for Kodos.
Yeah. Photos. Oh, man. Goodness gracious. So, communion, essential viewing, I say. If you like science fiction, if you like X-Files, you like Coast to Coast, any of that, you haven't seen this movie, watch it. Do it.
Take advantage of the Prime thing right now.
Yes, yes. Go watch it right now, because I think Shout's probably going to put it out on some Blu-ray or something. Because it said like Shout TV or something, the one I watched on Tubi. So,
Take
advantage of the Prime window. If you like it, which you should, buy the Shout DVD.
Yes, yes. This is if you are a Walken fan, this one is not to be missed. Whether it's serious, ironic, whatever, watch it. Is there anything we didn't talk about?
I feel like there must be, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Nothing on my notes that I haven't talked about.
I'd say if you're not a Walken fan like me, you should watch it anyway.
Yeah,
it's all you need from Walken.
Because it'll make you a Walken fan.
Yeah, it's not working on me.
You're gonna go watch Balls of Fire immediately after.
But if you need a Walken movie to watch, just say you watch it, and you see every trick in the book that he does in this. So, this is the quintessential Walken movie.
Yeah, he dances. He does all the weird jokes. He does all the non sequiturs. It's all here.
Yeah,
it's everything.
And I think this is where it started. Like I said, I think this is totally where it all began.
It's kind of like The Shining for Jack Nicholson.
Yes, yes, it is.
Mm. Oh yeah. Yeah,
comparison.
Yeah.
And I like it more than The Shining. So,
but what is Al Pacino's Shining or Al Pacino's Communion?
Dick Tracy.
Is it really?
Or I actually think it's I've always said it was Sin of a Woman.
No, but Dick Tracy, it's already
Dick Tracy,
in there.
Yeah, but Dick Tracy came first, and he's doing the shouting, screaming dunk.
No, I think it's Scarface.
He's not playing up his persona though.
Like Scarface, he's doing the Cuban thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's Heat. I don't know.
Yeah. Heat.
The most overrated film of the 90s.
Yeah, Heat is what year was Heat and what year was Dick Tracy?
That's 94. Dick Tracy's 91.
No, right? It's like 1990.
1990, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's a film of the 80s.
Heat might be 95. Let's
see. I think Heat
is 95.
Oof.
Fam, if you got to choose between the two Heats, you got to go with the 1986 Burt Reynolds one. That's the one.
Yeah.
You
did. Yeah. Absolutely. We have Dick Tracy, Godfather 3, Frankie and Johnny, Glengarry Glen Ross, Sin of a Woman. I think Dick Tracy's the first screaming, shouting Pacino thing.
God.
Or is it Sea of Love? I never saw Sea of Love. What's that?
I never saw Sea of Love either, and that might
be. I don't know if that seems too early or too late. I have no idea.
That's 89, so.
Nobody's seen Sea of Love, and it was a hit.
Can you imagine Pacino being Pacino, the persona in the Revolution?
Yeah, oh my gosh. The British are coming! Hey! Or was he still? Hey, the British are coming.
Yeah, I think it might still be there. No,
it's not cruising.
Fredo, you're not a friend. You're not a brother. Yeah, no, not cruising. He's still in the Fredo. He's still in that mode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dick Tracy, but you know, it's just. I remember thinking when I saw Scent of a Woman, I was like, that is full actor Pacino. But
it's too bad. It should have been Serpico, because so many movies and actors were inspired by his Serpico performance. You would think that would be it.
Yeah, you'd think so.
But not really the case, you know, including Thomas Milian in his Eurocrime films. When he's the good guy, he's often doing Serpico.
He's dressed like Pacino, yeah.
Is the Shining Jack Nicholson's first actor performance?
I would say One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Okay.
Okay. You could say five easy pieces. There's a couple of scenes in there you could.
Yeah, but he's still.
Full, I agree. He's full blown and one flew over the cuckoo's nest.
I feel like five easy pieces has enough nuance to where you. Can...
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, yeah. There it does still have that.
Cuckoo's Nest is clearly where it started. It might, you know. It's
what
like
about
maybe...
Going South? Remember Going South?
I've never seen.
It's a good movie. That's funny. It's actually a decent movie.
It's not Missouri Breaks. He's not. He is a subdued Jack in that.
Yeah.
You know what's a later film where he's pretty subdued is the what's it called? The Pact. It's the one that Sean Penn directed. Oh my gosh.
The Pact. Yeah.
Pact. Yeah. The Pact. That's a pretty for a late period Nicholson movie. The Pledge. No, it's The Pledge.
The Pledge.
Yeah,
The Pledge. That is a pretty nuanced late period Jack movie where he's not doing the Hactor Jack Nicholson bit.
He was nominated, if not won, that year, I believe.
Oh, interesting.
And he
did About Schmidt the next year. So.
And he's not really Jack in that either.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
And then he did Anger Management, and he's jacking that.
I never saw that. Is it any good?
No.
No, it's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because I thought the trailer was funny.
No, I was excited about it. I was like, oh, Adam Sandler and Jack Nicholson signed me up, but I didn't like it.
Yeah, everybody told me it was bad.
That movie was birthed in some random Lakers game.
Very likely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they share seats together. They're not seats, but they're side by side.
I got to tell you, though, the Citizen Kane of Jack Nicholson movies is Mars Attacks.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah. I remember you and the Quaker in Jamaica. That was a hell of a fight.
We've lost the legislative branch, but we still got the executive branch and the judicial branch. And as they say, two out of three, that ain't bad.
Best president ever.
Yeah, I love Mars Attacks. So good.
Best fictional president ever.
Oh.
What movie president is worse than Joe Biden? I'm going to say Harrison Ford in Air Force One.
Harrison Ford in Air Force One is a terrible president.
I never saw that, but I can only imagine.
It's Die Hard on a plane. That's all you need to know.
I just remember the trailer. He's like, get off my plane. And I never wanted to see it. So he's going to throw hot coffee at the terrorist and, you know, seize one of the guns.
So, like, there's Bill Pullman in Independence Day. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Nicholson in Mars Attacks.
Yes.
Kevin Klein and Dave. Another fictional one.
Kevin Klein gets to play president again in Wild Wild West.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man. Fictional presidents though. That's a good deep dive.
A great one is 7 Days in May. The president in that is like, you know, the type of president we'll never get.
Is that Kevin Costner?
No, this is an early 60s film, a Kirk Douglas.
Yeah. That's a great movie.
I can't remember who's playing the president, but
it's such a good movie.
Strong performance, and the character is written to be
It's Frederick
really
Marsh.
Smart.
It's Frederick Marsh.
Yeah. He's very wise and smart.
Yeah, that's a great movie. Yeah, for some reason the title didn't ding me, but yeah, that's a great movie.
Because it sounds like some recent Kevin Costner.
Yeah, it sounds like the Cuban Missile Crisis thing, you know?
Right.
Brian plays a really good Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, but right. Teddy Roosevelt was real, though.
Yeah,
we're strictly
doing fictional. Because the whole game got thrown off for me because I mentioned Kevin Klein in Wild Wild West plays Grant.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So okay, we're doing fictional presidents. All right. Well, I'll throw my vote up for Leslie Nielsen in those Scary Movie sequels, even though he's just.
Oh, you know who the worst fictional president is? I got you all beat. You ready? Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Simpsons. Boom.
Okay. Oh, that's right. The Simpsons
movie.
Yeah, great. Schwarzenegger's horrible. terrible.
Yeah,
we know for a fact that that would be a disaster if he was president.
He's worse than Joe Biden.
his celebrity-dom, his celebrity status, I think, dragged us into the terrible spot our country is in now.
Oh, man.
They totally the studios trolled us, making him the top action star of the 80s and 90s.
Damn it!
Man, damn it. Wow. I'm only 5'10". I tell you, when I'm 6'1".
Yeah, he wears lifts everywhere he goes.
Yeah, still does.
Friend of mine goes to the same church, and he says he wears lifts there. So
wears lifts in church.
He does. You got to keep up an image.
Yeah, that's true. Is he Lutheran or is he Catholic?
I'll ask my buddy next time I see him.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I think I'm pretty leaning towards Catholic, though.
Okay, because all the Nazis were Lutherans, and I know.
Well, he has to remove himself from that, you know, as much.
Right. He has to go to the Catholic Church instead.
my father, he was a Nazi.
Oh yes, he was reading Martin Luther. You know.
Well, he claims he paid the Simon Wiesenthal Institute to find out, and they said his father's not a Nazi. But then. And that stupid video he made a couple of months ago, he started acting like his father was a Nazi again.
Yeah. Well, it's kinda,
it was strange.
Anything to own the orange man, you know?
Yeah, truth is very flexible with that.
Yeah, the going to and proving your dad's not a Nazi sounds suspiciously like Ben Affleck, who had a slave master a family. It's like, no, he scrubbed it from the...
No, he had slave morality. That's different.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. I think Larry David found out his ancestors owned a plantation with slaves in the South.
Yeah, wouldn't
you? Yeah, I didn't watch it, but I was like, I just imagined. Right? Are you sure? Are you sure? What? They owned slaves? You kidding me?
There needs to be a Curb Your Enthusiasm season about that.
Yeah. There has to be. I know
he also needs to pay reparations. He's got billions. He can do it.
Yeah, I have not watched that show in like 9 years, but there must be an episode about it somewhere.
This is the Conan sword. It's the finest Atlantean steel.
By the way, the King Conan movie is still happening. Ah. I'm going to go to Robert E. Howard Days. I'm going to tell you all about it.
I'm waiting for the day where he shows up at Cross Plains, Texas to actually promote that.
Yeah, it just cost $50 to come hear me talk about it.
We just got to give the script another polish and take it around for
a test. John Milius is on board, I promise. Yeah.
Hasn't Morgan Freeman, I'm sorry to bring this back up, hasn't Morgan Freeman played the president several times?
Yeah.
Different film?
He was the president in
Deep Impact. And then there was Clive Owen. No, not Clive Owen. I'd watch him if it were Clive Owen. What's the movie with there's three of them now. Doesn't he play the president in the White House Down movies? Or Olympus?
Yeah, yeah, I think he did. Oh, at least one or two.
Olympus Has Fallen. White House Down, the president was Jamie Foxx, which I'm sure he probably sucks. So.
Yeah,
Jamie Foxx is not presidential. Sorry.
No.
He's also
Morgan Freeman is highly presidential, though.
I don't think he is. He's from Mississippi. There'll never be a president from Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jamie Foxx is not many things. Not presidential, not funny, and not straight. That's
yeah,
fact.
Well, you know, they got Obama in there.
I don't want to tell you, Shawshank is made of fairy tales. He also played the president of South Africa in Invictus.
You played Mandela? Ooh.
Yeah,
oh, that's right, Mandela. You're right.
Because it was his buddy Eastwood was directing it.
Yeah. Didn't watch any of those Eastwood movies from that period. Didn't watch that. Didn't watch the Supernatural one with Matt Damon.
Hereafter. Matt Damon was in Invictus as well.
I can't stand watching Matt Damon, so I never saw it.
Yeah. No thanks.
Not an Eastwood partisan. I don't see everything he does.
No, there was a period of time where I thought Eastwood was making the most boring critic bait movies. Like, oh gosh, you know, he had that period where he was like, you had like Hereafter, J. Edgar, you know.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Changeling. After Mystic River, you know, he had a huge hit with that movie, or like a critical hit, and then he was doing stuff like Million Dollar Baby and like, you know, he did Flags of Our Fathers, which I didn't see. I did see Letters from Iwo Jima, and that was pretty good.
Flags is not good.
That's what I heard.
It's not good at all.
No. Gran Torino, I watched because of the meme. You know, it's Clint as an old man. But
well, that's a good.
But after that, you have Invictus, Hereafter, J. Edgar, Jersey Boys, then American Sniper. Okay, I went out to watch that because I wanted to see a canon film.
I liked Jersey Boys. I thought it was all
right. My wife says it's good. I'm going to watch it some point.
They should have. They should have really embraced the musical aspect of it. I don't think they did, but it's fine.
Yeah, I think they could have done more with that in that way.
It's fine. Changeling, Walter goes up to bat for it a lot.
Yeah, Walter likes
it. It's depressing. I mean, you know it's going to end on a bad note. And it's just not, I don't know, it's just not entertaining. I'm not entertained by films like that.
After watching For Those Who Wish Me Dead, I think is the title, the Jolie movie on HBO Max, it dawned on me that she's never done anything substantial ever. And I thought, well, I got to watch The Changeling.
Right. Well, it's probably her more important acting role, I guess, in her career. Mm-hmm. But frankly, I would rather just go watch Cyborg 2 or something like that.
You know, Angelina Jolie, very realistically cast as a firefighter in that new movie, Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Yeah.
I heard the premise, Angelina Jolie's a firefighter. I was like, nope.
Even written by Taylor.
Here's the thing about that, they get a few things right. One, the opening, even though they go whole hog with it to the point where it's just like, okay, calm down. They got the blue collar language down. My dad was a fireman. So I grew up, not most of my childhood, but I spent a lot of time in the station. And, you know, those guys would just like talk like, you know, like bros in the locker room. That's the way it went. And they do that when they introduce her and her brethren. And she's also like a crazy person, which kind of makes sense. Like she's, she's doing this thrill seeking thing where she's in the back of a pickup truck and has a parachute and she pulls the parachute while they're driving like 70 or something. And I can kind of believe that because they're smoke jumpers and you got to be slightly crazy to be jumping into, you know, that scenario. So I thought that was kind of an okay touch. But overall the movie was pretty much nuts and bolts. Really? There was nothing there.
It's disappointing because it's Taylor Sheridan directing and I'm starting to think maybe he just doesn't have it as a director. You know, he's better off just as a screenwriter and TV guy.
I watched he's in an episode of Enterprise and he exudes big dumb guy energy.
Really? Does he?
Yeah. He has just this Neanderthal face. I don't know what it is, but
you know. But you're right about Jolie in the movie. She's a toothpick. There's no way that she could be a fireman.
I remember when I saw the movie Wanted, I thought I was like, should somebody feed her? Like she just
looks shockingly skinny in that.
Yeah.
When I saw Wanted, because there was they played up the big nude scene, and I was just like, oh my god, she looks terrible.
Yeah, she looked. I thought she looked sick in that movie.
And the thing is, if you saw her in like Hackers or Gia or whatever it is, she looks incredible in Gia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like she's like the best looking woman in the 90s, basically. And if you see like even something dumb like the Coveney movie, I think we're going to do one of these days, Playing God. In that. She looks beautiful in that. She was like the best looking actress.
Cyborg 2 as well, like you just mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to buy that because I just watched the Van Damme Cyborg and I'm like, I've never seen Cyborg 2 and it's Jolie. So I kind of want to see it now.
It's kind of unwatchable.
But I'm sure it is.
Hackers is awesome.
She looks good in that.
Yeah.
I ever sat through the film, but I know she looks good in it.
Yeah.
But she was beautiful. She had an incredible charisma at the time, and it's really striking. And I don't know, when she got thin and everything, it just
for what did she get thin for? Lara Croft, maybe?
Supposedly her mom was dying, and it was a pretty awful, you know, drawn out incident. She wasn't eating and just never gained the weight back or something. I'm not sure what it was.
I remember her still looking good in those Tomb Raider movies.
Yeah, she still looked good in the Tomb Raider.
She looked good in that. She looked good in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And then then it looked like an eating disorder or something. She just wasn't eating right or took up a different diet. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, Wanted in 08 was when I noticed, like, okay, this is the kind of the stake in the ground. This is where, you know, think there's a problem.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I just remember when she first shows up in the movie, I remember I kind of recoiled when I saw her. I was like, oh, she didn't look good. Yeah.
Right. And I remember in Salt, she looked pretty good. And in some shots, she's gorgeous. And you're reminded, wow, she's like best looking actress around. And nobody else compares. She's got the screen charisma. Scarlett Johansson never really had it. And but then after that, it's like, I don't know if I've seen her in anything since then, because she makes a lot of stuff I don't care about.
Yeah, I don't think she's, I mean, from what I've seen, and I've seen enough, like, I don't think she's ever made anything that's like, wows me, ever.
Right.
Ever. Nothing substantial that I can think of. This Taylor Sheridan thing isn't, you know, didn't really do it for me. We used, you know, it's your average nuts and bolts thriller, really, from the 90s or something like that. And no, she shouldn't be playing a fireman. She's, you know, she weighs, you know, a buck 05.
this might have been the time you could have had Melissa McCarthy in the role.
That would be closer to the truth. I mean, I knew female firefighters. They were always very butch looking. They weren't fat like Melissa McCarthy. They were very butch ladies. And they had, you know. But yeah, Jolie, no, I don't think so. It's very odd. Jolie's looking like those gray balloons from Communion, actually.
it's like unfortunate.
Yeah, she does. She does. Sad.
Yeah.
It's the cruelty of Hollywood.
That's what randyism does to you.
Yep.
Yeah.
What randyism will do.
Yeah, she is a she's a big Ayn Rand disciple. Which they hide that all the time. They hide her politics. She's reportedly very right-wing.
She wanted to adapt Atlas Shrugged for a long time. That was like her project.
She was also like the most well-known Obama hater of actors at that time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, it was out in the gossip magazine.
Well, her dad's a arch-conservative John Voight, you know?
Yeah, and her politics apparently aren't that different. You know, even when she doesn't get along with her dad, her politics are not very different from her father's.
That's why she got rid of Brad Pitt.
I always heard she wore the pants in that relationship. So
I remember Brad criticized Obama too, but it was the kind of the mamby pamby argument. It was like, well, he's not liberal enough.
Yeah.
Brad
in movies is better than Brad in real life. I prefer to think of him as Cliff Booth and just.
Oh yeah, all I ever want to see from Brad is Cliff Booth, and that's it. You can take it. Everything else.
Yeah,
oh well,
best,
you know what?
The
Jesse James movie is excellent, but that's kind of despite him, actually.
Yeah. Well, do we want to go ahead and rate Communion?
Sure.
All right, Eric. What do you give Communion? This was your pick. What do you give it?
For what it is, I'm giving it an 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. It's pretty solid. John, what about you?
I'm giving it a 7.5. I liked it.
And I give it a 7. I think it's a excellent cult movie. Go watch it. Walking fan, alien fan, whatever. See it. If you're not a fan of those things, see it anyway.
And it's got me interested in checking out some of Whitley Strieber's other work that missed out on and ignored.
I want to read the book because that was the thing everybody was saying. Oh, I never saw the movie, but I read the book. I saw that.
It's enjoyable. So far, it's enjoyable. I do want to read his Wolfen. I do want to read that.
Yeah, Wolfen's good. I remember really liking Wolfen when I read it years ago. And not like the film, which was kind of a lobster. But the movie, the book is pretty good.
Did the film come out the same year as the other two big werewolf movies of that era?
It was around that time. It was not. They were not far apart from each other.
Yeah. It's probably better than those two. I'll say that. That's just
it is. I think it is. I didn't care for it, but I do think it's better than The Howling and better than American Werewolf in London.
I think the Landis movie and the Dante movie, they're, you know, we've discussed it on the show before. I think they're overpraised because there's so few good werewolf movies out there.
Yeah. Well, werewolves kind of get shafted when it comes to movie reputation.
That and mummies.
Yes. Like. Mummies are getting pretty bad these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, guys. Anything to add before we go?
Watch the skies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep watching the skies. Yeah.
John, keep watching the skies. I want to believe. That's what I'm saying. I'm sitting here with. And you know what? I also still believe, like that guy in Lost Boys, the sax player.
That movie. Oh,
yeah.
God.
When are we going to, I had a listener send me a message on Twitter asking when we're going to do DC Cab, speaking of Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, it's an adequate movie.
Yeah. Could talk about Mr. T, you know.
If it's on Prime, sure. Talk about Charlie Barnett, the super influential black comedian who died of AIDS.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Dave Chappelle was like a protege of his.
Interesting.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, okay. Charlie Barnett's kind of a missing link between like Eddie Murphy and Dave Chappelle and a lot of these guys.
Okay, we gotta put this one on the burner.
Yeah, that to consider. If it shows up at streaming, please alert me and we'll schedule for it.
I'll do it. All right. Well, with that, I'm gonna go ahead and say adios.
I say us.
Well, good night.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.